down to center ice we go, and the Stanley Cup playoffs are underway.
Chicago Sports Conversation is now.
Every game's big, so intensity, the speed, the physicality steps up every single game. I think I wouldn't say teams feel each other out in the first game, but there's no doubt it becomes more and more personal as the series goes along.
The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. We're live at the United Center outside Section 109, the Goose Island Pub. Great place to start your Blackhawks celebration tonight. It's a must-win game. Harry Tynowitz, Brent Sopel, yours truly, Mark Harmon. A lot of talk, a lot of panic. The Blackhawks down one game to none after giving up one lone goal to Victor Arvidsson. You're giving me the look of death already, Harry. It's good to see you, by the way.
Great to see you. It's great to be here and have Brent Sopel here. No one is going to try to get by us today because Sopes will stand him up on the blue line. But the idea that this is a must-win for the Blackhawks, it's funny how we've come to love this core, yet the lifetime Chicago sports fan just seems to overreact. Must-win is if Nashville gets to three wins, which I don't see them doing. Right, Sopes? This is not a must-win game. You want to win, but it's not a must-win.
No, you're absolutely right. But first off, April had the baby today, so finally the draft was born, so the day is set. I'm good. I'm good. Now I can talk hockey.
Excellent.
That birth has just been driving me crazy. I've been watching it 24/7 for the last, 45, 60 days. Thank goodness we got that out of the way. Now we can worry about this must win here at the United Center tonight. And, typical fans, if you don't win, it's a must win. And it's not only in Chicago. I was on the NHL Network and listening a lot of different stations and teams that were down 1-0. Oh, it's panic time. It's panic time, What's that Staples commercial? The little red button. You start smashing it. It's not panic time. Do they have to have to play a lot better? Yes. Did they play good last game? Not at all. Did they outshoot them? Yeah. Was there good scoring opportunity? Grade A scoring opportunities? Not at all. So the whole game tram needs to change. They have to. Even if they don't win tonight, are they down two games? Yes. Are they going to be upset fans? Absolutely. Are they going to be upset? Absolutely. Is that life or death? Absolutely not. The whole key has to be they have to play better.
Okay, just for the record, I don't view this for myself as I'm with you, Harry. Until you get down. Listen, when you've been down 3-1 to the Detroit Red Wings, you've come back in one series. I always think the Blackhawks have a great chance, and every game is a game unto itself. We can go back to the World Series last year. It wasn't a must-win until it had to be a must-win. However, when you do lose at home, I think it does take on a little added extra because you're not expected to win on the road in Game 1. You are expected to protect home ice. I don't think the Blackhawks will have trouble going on the road or certainly are incapable of going on the road and winning. I wouldn't be surprised if they won both games in Nashville coming up next week. But I think because it is at home, it adds a little more on. Fair enough?
Yeah. The Hawks always have played well on the road. They played well on the road in the playoffs. I know the Rangers had the most wins on the road this year, and they almost went up 2-0, but Montreal came storming back late last night with seconds left to tie it and then won it in overtime. But what's great about the Blackhawks is the core, and that's where I have put my faith. Coach Q knows exactly what he's doing, and Bowman has just decorated the roster around this core. But these guys of Taves and Kane and Hossa, of Jalmerson and Seabrook and Duncan Keith, I know that these guys are going to find a way by the time this series ends and they're shaking hands that the Blackhawks will be advancing.
Well, you're talking about 8 rookies playing this year, and Coach Q has been manipulating everybody around, and now
Jedi mind tricks.
Right, but okay, now you're in the playoffs, and there is added pressure, and we saw Nick Schmaltz feeling that clearly in Game 1, which was the only reason that Nashville scored the one goal they had. So I don't know, Brent, how long you think it takes for a guy who's playing in the playoffs for the first time to feel comfortable playing in the playoffs.
Well, you should be comfortable already. Obviously Game 1 is over and done with. You're going to see, obviously, lineup chain up. And John Hayden's going to come out and Rasmussen's going to come in. And, everybody's talking about, line combination. There's only one line that has stayed consistent for the last 2 years. And that wasn't consistent the last month anyways. Nisimov got hit. And Nisimov, Kane, and Panarin, that line is consistent. After that, it's the bingo balls. Let's pull it out. They're bouncing around. Whatever number pops up. So I'm not worried about, who's going to be playing with who, because you know Joe Quenneville loves to mix lines. He can read the bench. He can read those players better than anybody, and he knows how to get the most out of every single guys. And you know, certain guys, you know, obviously Kiro started on the fourth line, went up and he had some of the best shifts with Panic and Taze last game. So you might see that. You got Schmaltz there saying, you know, coming down to the third line. You know, you're probably going to see a lot of juggling. But and, you know, back to your original question, it's done. It's over. You know, it's hockey time now. You should be able to relax. You got that first game under your belt, and you should be able to play hockey the way you need to.
Boy, well, you know, it took a while for Tanner Caro to get up here this year, but since American Caro came up here, he's been terrific, and I just love the way he plays. Brent, when you're Coach Q and the rest of the staff, and you're trying to figure out, you know, it seems like that there are 10 guys set and there's two extra spots amongst the forwards, and you're trying to figure out, you know, who to put up there, and you've got, you know, a guy, you know, like Vinny Hinostroza, who can just fly down the ice, and you've got guys that, like, you know, Thomas Yurko, that can go and get in close to the net. How do you gauge the value of a guy like, you know, Jordan Tutu, a veteran presence, or, you know, or Desjardins, who, you know, give you something completely different than what these young guys do?
Well, you know, first off, you know, experience. You know, they've been around a long time. Obviously, you know, Desjardins want to stand the cup. You know, obviously, Jordan Tutu's new, but they've been around the league a long period of time. They know what their role is. They know Jordan Tutu knows his role isn't just to dump it in, dangle at the blue line, stick handle, do whatever. He knows what his role is. Now, when you talk about playoff time, you talk about, obviously, Yurko, Hinostroza, you mentioned, you know, John Hayden. Those guys fit in the same mold. They're young. They're newer to this team. And can you rely on them to do the job? And that job isn't going to score goals. No, your first and second lines are your offensive lines. You want some contributions from your third line. If you get a contribution on your fourth line, but that fourth line has to be solid defensively. You've got to get the pucks in deep, and you need that line to get you momentum. So you have to gauge that. You know, is Hinostroza going to get you momentum with a big hit? Probably not.
I mean, they're starting the fourth line today with Rasmussen, Caro, and Jordan Tutu. I don't know how many minutes those – no one knows how many minutes those guys are going to get. And, Brent, you're kind of looking at me with a smile. I don't exactly know what it means, but
well,
it means something.
You go back to last game. You know, Tutu and Hayden were on the left and right side, as you mentioned, as you talked about. They played 5 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, Caro – he, you know, some of the best shifts of last game was when he moved up to that first line with Taze and Panic.
He looks super confident.
He's playing really well. They're hanging on the puck. They're doing a great job cycling. So those, you're going to see probably a lot of the same line. You got to get your Patrick Kane. He are 22, 24 minutes if we're talking a 60-minute game. You're going to Jonathan Taze is going to be up there. Those you're going to still rely on those horses. Schmaltz, you really want Schmaltz to play a better game. They need him to play a better game. They need Ryan Hartman to do what he did last game. But, you know, he's got to be a little more disciplined. He did take that one bad penalty. So, you know, as they keep going along here, they need contributions from everybody.
Got a ton of guests going to come by here today. We're going to talk to Steve Conroy, David Haugh, the Tribune's going to be here, Chris Hine of the Tribune's going to be here, Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, and perhaps some others as well, as we're with you till 6:30 in our live broadcast before the Blackhawks face Nashville in the first round of the 2017 Stanley Cup playoffs is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business. It's also sponsored by Geico. Visit them at geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO, A-U-T-O. Harry, you all right?
Yeah, you know.
You look nervous. I'm going to be honest. You don't look good. You look irritated.
But, take anything from a guy who's supposed to be on our side. We're in Chicago. And what jersey is he wearing? He's wearing a Nashville Predators jersey.
I wonder if he even realizes. You've got the Nashville Stars. You've got the All-Star. You got Kaner's All-Star sweater.
What is the name on the back again?
It's Kane.
Correct.
Yes, but what is the city on the sleeve?
The All-Star game was in Nashville that year. That's the only Blackhawks jersey.
28. There's 29 now. You could wear a Vegas Golden Knights jersey, and you wouldn't upset people as much as you might. You got the Nashville Three Stars. You know, you got the city of Nashville.
City colors.
You got the Predators team colors.
Listen.
You've got the fade that they do in their jersey numbers, which is actually kind of a cool look for, you know, jersey numbers. But, you know, as Brent points out accurately, you are sitting here as a Blackhawk fan wearing Preds colors.
See,
what up with that, dog?
Traitor.
See, this is where, you know, you're getting bogged down in a little bit of minutia right now. And I understand that that's I could see how it would upset you because you're a jersey guy. Mm-hmm. And when you open up the Harry Tynowitz closet,
yes.
You've got how many jerseys? 198?
Yes, and more fit now.
Right. So I'm not a jersey guy. So when I open up the closet, there's one option. My one Blackhawks
jersey.
That's
your only Hawk jersey?
That's correct.
For as long as you've been here, you're on WGN, man, the flagship home of Blackhawk hockey.
I can't be dropping $200 on a jersey.
I see.
The money you make? Are you kidding me?
Exactly right.
Wait.
Meaning you sleep in it.
Have I not taught you anything? Who said you drop money on a jersey?
Hey, you got to.
I see you talking to Rogo. I see you talking to Blanc and McDonough. You tell me those guys can't.
All you have to do is just bypass one of your Tinder dates and buy a jersey.
I don't have the connection with Rogo and Jay Blanc that you do, and I love those guys, and I'm sure they love me too. But I'm not going to call them up and say, "Hey, can I get a Blackhawks jersey?" They got enough guys going at them. I'm happy having my one jersey.
I don't think you need to say that you want a Blackhawks jersey. I think you just need to say, "Man, I feel kind of bad because I'm Soap's pointed out I'm wearing a Predators jersey today, and I wish
it's
I were
not
in
a
my
Predators jersey. It's just not a Predators jersey." You can check it out, by the way, if you're coming to the game at section 109, 108, 109, the Goose Island Pub. All right, well, that's, I didn't think we're going to go down that road, but we
did.
Does
it say Forsberg or Kane on the back? Let me check.
It says Patrick Kane, 88, arguably the MVP of your Chicago Blackhawks.
Hang on a second. When does jerseys have first names, too? It's Patrick Kane on the back? I didn't see that. I missed that.
I don't know where to go here. I feel slightly under attack. And I'm just trying to support the ball club.
Hey, playoff season.
That's,
you got to be ready.
What? Yeah. I've seen so much great goaltending in the first two nights of the playoffs. You're kind of right now, you're a Jake Allen.
Okay, well,
you're
a
Henrik Lundqvist
now. It's
you're under attack, but you're going to get through it.
It's interesting that you bring that up because when we come back here, I want Brent to break down whether Pekka Rinne was great, was he average, was he just there. Because there's a lot of chatter about how they didn't do anything to Pekka Rinne, and I'm wondering. I thought Pekka Rinne had his moments of stardom in game one, but that's just my opinion. All right, this week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot get extra cheesy with your favorite dishes. It's Chicago's Best Cheesy Bites Sunday night at 10 on WGN TV. Blackhawks and the Predators coming up a little bit later on 720 WGN.
Puck knocked up the slot. Ellis to Yossi fires a shot blocked by Hartman at the line. He'll race to get the puck in the Predators' zone along the left wing side. Put it in front. Holzer shoots! And a big save by Rinne down in the butterfly position.
Well, he looked all right tonight because we didn't make it tough on him, and I think that's that's got to be the case. I mean, any goalie sees the puck as much as he did tonight are going to be effective, and I think that whether we took the puck to the net ourselves or had the net presence or played goal when we were at the net, I think that's what we got to find a way to get through and hang around. And, that's where the rewards are.
720 WGN, Blackhawks and the Predators coming up. 6:30, our pregame. 7 o'clock, the puck drop. And this is our advance. Brent Sopel, Harry Tynowitz, I'm Mark Harmon. All right, Pekka Rinne. This man is capable, Brent. I know he's not necessarily in his prime anymore, but he's a big dude. And he's got a shutout under his belt in game one. So I know that the Hawks are going to be in front of the net all night tonight, or at least a lot more. But it's not like they're going up against a pretty good goalie here. Is that fair to say?
No, let's take that. He's a great goalie. You got to give credit where credit's due. This guy's been around the league and faced him quite a bit. 6'5", 220 pounds. He covers that net. He's a Finnish goalie, so he's very active, very athletic. He can, he doesn't quit on any puck. So, give him credit. Was he fabulous? Was he spectacular? No, he didn't have to be. He was good because the Blackhawks didn't do what they needed to. And for me, it goes back to the neutral zone. The Nashville Predators played a 1-4, so the Blackhawks tried to carry it in. couldn't get it in, turned it over quite a bit. Some long passes from the Hawks goal line all the way to the far blue line. Turned over a lot. So when they did get in the zone, they're really spread apart, and they didn't have the opportunity to get to the net. And there's a few times that Nashville did a good job boxing them out, but the Hawks have to do a better job through the neutral zone, come together, and when they're confronted, chip the puck by, go and get it, get your cycle game going, get it back to the point, exactly what they do in the regular season. But as soon as they start turning the puck over, then that's when it takes all the speed away, all the momentum. They're really spread apart. They're not close to each other. And then that translation into the offensive side, they're spread out apart, so there's no high guy. There's nobody within that house, which is right in front of the crease, right in that slot area. And that's why Pecorini is 6'5". If he can, this is the NHL. This is the best league in the world. If the goaltender can see it, guess what? He's going to stop it.
Yeah, and Brent mentions he's 6'5". That's three inches bigger than Crawford. Crawford's a big dude. Crow takes up a lot of space in between the pipes, and this guy is 3 inches bigger than him. So, I mean, you've got to get to the net. And, John Weidman, Troy Murray, they talk about it. Pat and Eddie. Oh, Eddie makes a point out of it, constantly. If you want to score, go to the front of the net. Same thing for you single guys. If you're in a bar, you want to score, go to the front of the bar. But, they've said it. The Hawks said they're going to crash the net. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. Do you believe against the Preds' defense that they will be able to get in position where they can either, A, deflect a puck, or, B, get a rebound?
Oh, yeah. Obviously Nashville's top four defensemen are some of the best mm-hmm. in the NHL. They got, their top four guys scored 150 points. So they're very offensive. They play a 200-foot game, but are they physical? Absolutely not. So it comes down to wants and will to get in front of that. And again, for me, did they have enough of that? No, definitely not. But it really brings back to me is the neutral zone, that it really took them off their whole game, that they couldn't get that through the neutral zone together the way they wanted to. So then when it came to getting the puck in the offensive zone, they might have been tired. They turned it over, so they weren't where fresh, didn't be where they needed to be. So that whole thing for me was the key to game one, was that neutral zone. Now, will we see a different game tonight? Yeah, absolutely, because this is where you find out if you have a great coach or a good coach. We all know Joe Quenneville is the second winningest coach in NHL history for a reason. This is because it's a battle within the battle. The game's battling on the ices, but the coaches are battling, and that's what guys don't know. There's after games, okay, they watch the games two or three times. Okay, what can we change here? How can we tweak this? Okay, we didn't get through the neutral zone very good. Okay, how are we going to do this? Our power play was terrible. Okay, what do we have to do? We need to do this. So now on Peter Laviolette, Nashville Predators coach, is like, okay, we won the game. Yeah, we're up 1-0. Okay, what's Joel Quenneville going to throw at me now? So now he's trying to think, what will Joel Quenneville throw at him to be ready for this game so that they can counterbalance that?
Well, it's one thing that I think that's pretty obvious is the Hawks are going to play a lot more dump and chase tonight, right? They're going to get in the neutral, they're flipping in, they're going to chase it down. I mean, that's a thing. So that style of play, I would think that the Blackhawks can be successful doing that, fair enough?
Well, Blackhawks can be successful at any way they want to play as long as they all buy into that. Every single guy has to buy into the way they play. And this is Chicago Black. Are they going to buy in? They're going to buy in whatever Joel Quenneville tells them to do, they're going to do.
Yeah, and you guys have had good success against Laviolette in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's history there. Things happen.
Here come the Flyers.
Good things happen when it's Laviolette versus Coach Q. You talk about the Preds' top four D-men. They made a big trade, and they brought in P.K. Subban.
Yep.
How good is P.K. Subban?
That was obviously it was around the NHL. Everybody's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. I've played against Shea Weber for years and years, and I used to love playing against Shea Weber. I used to love taking his slap shots off my body and permanently bruising me. And
You loved it.
I loved it.
Hockey
player. I still got the nightmares from it, and, I got permanent swelling in my body, because of him. So I appreciate that. Thanks, Webs. But at the end of the day, they're both great D-men. It was, a lot of it was a contract move, but a lot of it, P.K. Subban on the ice is an amazing play. Amazing player. Off the ice, he had some problems in Montreal and in that dressing room. And that's why the trade was made from inside that dressing room. And it took Nashville a little while to get going here, too. to really to get everybody to fit in and understand the game.
Keeping you up to date on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Ottawa was down 3-1 in the third, but they've just scored two goals in a matter of about 2 minutes. So it's 3-3, the Senators and the Bruins. And if you're curious what's going on at Wrigley, Pirates are leading the Cubs 8-6, two outs in the bottom of the eighth. So if anything happens there, we, of course, will let you know. And Chicago Cup fans, this is the event everyone is calling a don't-miss Cubs Moments of Victory. It's the art exhibition Saturday, April the 8th through Sunday the 30th. It's at the Water Tower Place on Michigan Avenue. You can relive the thrills of the greatest World Series ever through these never-before-seen paintings by Major League Baseball's famed-sanctioned artist. You know who it is, Harry.
That would be Leroy Neiman.
Oppie Otterstad. For more information, go to CubsArtEvent.com. That's CubsArtEvent.com. Admission is free, and all the artworks are available for purchase. Don't miss your chance to own a unique piece of Cubs history. Oppie Otterstad crushes Harry. Quick timeout coming up after 4:30. I want to get a little into the Ryan Hartman slash Andrew Shaw slash young guys talking slash let's get some hatred going on in the series. I love a good dislike in a playoff series. 720 WGN.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN and on demand at WGNradio.com.
720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. Brent Sopel, Harry Tynowitz. We are outside the Goose Island Pub as the gates appear to be open. Some Blackhawks fans are coming on in. Come by, say hi. We would love to see you. Cleveland survives. They beat the Indiana Pacers 109-108 as LeBron had 32. CJ Miles of the Pacers had basically a little slightly off balance but open shot that would have won it for Indiana at the buzzer, but he shot it short. And so the Cleveland Cavaliers are up 1-0 as the NBA playoffs are starting today. The Bulls are going tomorrow, 5:30 in Boston. Of course, the Blackhawks and the Predators coming up tonight. It's my favorite time of year. Baseball's on, basketball playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs. There's no better time of year, team,
Carms,
so you all know.
Carms, how do you mix in your dates? There's so much going on. I know you got a plethora of them.
I've been forced to dial it back. That's just the way it is.
Kerm's dates are often a best of five. He wants them to be best of seven, but they're usually just best of five.
Hey, you have to prioritize.
A good-looking guy like this, my idol, come on.
And don't forget, we're on the road to the Kentucky Derby.
We are?
Oh, yeah, like you didn't know. Come on, Arkansas Derby. Jeez.
When is the Kentucky Derby, Harry?
Kentucky Derby is always the first Saturday in May.
It's always the first Saturday.
Yes, and let's hope that Coach Q cannot go this year.
I will mark that down officially in my sports head now.
There you go.
It's not really a sport, horse racing, right?
Don't even start.
I didn't mean to do that. Okay, so Ryan Hartman, 22 years old. They're asking a lot of this guy, Brent Sopel. I mean, I feel like talking about going to the net, like what names come to mind? I feel like he's at the top of the list of somebody who's going to do a lot of the dirty work here for the Hawks tonight.
Everybody has to go. It doesn't matter if who you are, if you're Kiro, you're Kane, you're Tage, you're Panarin, everybody has to go. You know, you ask a little bit more of certain guys to have that net front presence, you know, on the power play or something like that, but you know, when you talk about this, it's a team game. You know, you got the puck at the goal line, take it to the net. You know, if it's gets back to the point, they go D to D. You got to find a way to get through that net. You know, this is the new rules. You know, it's so easy to play the NHL game. You know, now it is. Back when I used to play, it was a war. You know, I wanted to kill you. You know, I was going to cross check you. I was going to slash you. If you weren't hurt or bleeding each game, you obviously didn't play. Now, you can't do that in front of that. You know, it's not old school. We can't hook you. We can't hold you. So you got to find a way to battle there, spin off, push back at them, you know, find a way to get there.
It's the no-hurting league.
Yeah, it's kind of like the NBA, no babies allowed.
I can't believe we just went into a hole how the NHL is going soft, Rant. Do you really think the NHL is going a lot softer?
No question.
Look, the NHL is protecting their stars. The NFL is protecting their quarterbacks. That's why people call it the no-fun league.
And, you know, NBA, you know, that's your game. That's your forte. They're protecting those stars, too.
Yes. And, exactly. But hold on a second here. if we're going to go down this road,
all right.
Yes.
Don't you, as a fan, want to watch the best players in the game play? Like, if I'm watching the New England Patriots, I'm way more interested in watching him with Tom Brady at quarterback protected than Jimmy Garoppolo or whoever. Same thing with the Blackhawks. I don't want Patrick Kane to be under fire on the ice or Jonathan Tate.
But you also don't want BS penalties. You don't want whether it's a guy who, you know, breathes on Tom Brady or it's a guy that, you know, bumps into a guy on the ice. You know, you don't want BS penalties called because they're going out of their way to protect the great players. I mean, that's why you have enforcers on your team.
Well, every major sport has changed.
Yeah.
It's all gotten softer. Every single one of them. We can sit down and go from hockey. Every single one of them has gotten softer compared to where it was.
But, okay, hold on. See, when people say that, I think about, and you would know this better than anyone, Brent, how hard guys train. It's not, you know, back in the day, guys had different jobs in the offseason. They weren't making the money that they're making now, but they would go and do whatever they did, be an accountant or lay bricks, whatever it was, in the offseason.
Well, you're going way back. You're going 70s
okay,
if you're talking about that.
But let's just go say 15 years back. Guys nowadays, it's 365 a year they're in the gym, right? And they're eating kale and this and that and doing Pilates.
Well, 15 years I was playing in the league.
Right.
And, you know, in the summertime, I was a workout fiend. You know, that's all I did. I'm squatting, you know, 600-700 pounds, doing the things I knew. But it doesn't matter what you're doing now compared to where it was. The rule changes has what's changed the game. Yeah, you know, everybody talks about concussions. You know, my brain's fried. You see all these wires sticking out. I've had, you know, I don't know, 15 concussions. That's why I am today. But, you know, they know a lot more of it. They've changed the rules. You're right, to protect the stars, like you said, so you can watch your Tom Brady and your LeBron and guys like that. But they know more about injuries, and they want to protect those injuries, not like what it was back in the day. They didn't care.
And I don't, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Brent's not saying that it's not – you got to be a hard ass to play in this league. You got to be tough as nails to play in the NHL. You've got to be tough. He's just saying that the referees have been given a set of rules that force the league to be softer in nature.
Well, the rule, the 0405 rules, made there was no more clutching. There was no more grabbing. That used to be – I used to punch you. I used to slash you. I used to cross-check you. Just completely abused.
Did you have the hole in the glove? Did you get the finger out?
Oh, yeah, do whatever. Any soft spot, any open spot, I would go after. You see, there used to be line brawls. There used to be a lot more fights. You know, there was a lot more of that. You know, you have to be – you know, there's nobody tougher than us, any hockey players. Hands down, we're – you know, a million times tougher than football players. You know, it's not even a question in my mind. Yeah, and I'm not biased.
Just not even a little.
Not at all.
If somebody was putting you in the court of law, hey, Brent, tell us why hockey players are tougher than football players, what would you say?
Well, you take a look at when we won the Stanley Cup in 2010, I think we ended up playing 124 games. Plus, we went to Europe. So we went to Switzerland, started the season in Finland, you know, came back. So we played 124 games. You know, in football, you know, you play 60 in the regular season. The Bears have played 16 games a year for the last, I don't know, how many, 50 years or something?
You know, about 40 years, yeah.
So, you know, that's it. That's all you do. You play, and, you know, there's times where you're playing 13, 14, 15, 16 games in 1 month. So you talk about what we got to do, and every time you – get hit in football, yeah, your brain gets right. Every time we get hit in the boards, our brain, you know. So I played a contact sport. You know, I started skating when I was 2, playing hockey when I was 5, started playing contact when I was, I think, 9 or 10. So I've been getting hit in the boards since I was 10 years old till I was almost 40 years old. You know, football players, even when you had the kids that are playing, they're only playing like 6 or 7 games, you know, compared to – so I played – thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of contact game.
Now, Carm, you know, yeah. I think the first thing that flashes to your mind if you're a Blackhawks fan is Duncan Keith losing 7 teeth and coming back on the ice 37 seconds later.
Listen, first of all, we're talking about the toughest of the tough. We're talking about football players and hockey players. That both
those would be the two toughest.
Yeah, to be at that level and do what they do, there has to be something a little bit off.
Hang on. I'll be the first to tell you, I am completely off.
Right.
I am off my rocker. I'm not going to hide behind that.
Right. We're splitting hairs here. But
Jack Youngblood of the Rams played a Super Bowl with a broken leg.
Yeah, every single play on the football field is a car crash. It doesn't end until somebody is on the ground. It's a ridiculously insane sport.
Now, you were up early this morning playing tennis. How much contact in your match today?
You know, it was very tough tonight with Jim. You know, he came ready to go at 8 a.m. at the Waveland Courts.
How long did it take him to get up out of the chair?
Well, first of all, we had a situation today, Harry. I thank you for bringing it up. I figured we'd get into my athletic career.
Yes.
But
go from soap squatting 700 pounds to you opening a can of tennis balls.
Well, let me tell you what happened on the court today. We got there a little bit early, and there was some moisture on the court. So we did have to get out the broom, and we had to sweep off the extra moisture again. There was some puddles. So now you're in a left-right crisscross with a sweeping before you get on the court and play. Harry, that is not easy because your focus, you're thinking about your opponent. Now all of a sudden you gotta dive down onto a puddle, and it's hard to keep it all together. So Harry, thank you for bringing it up. It was tough.
Was that from outside or was that from you crying?
Tennis players get no love, but they're some of the greatest athletes in the entire world, just so everybody knows. And by the way,
I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
They're 5 hours on the court under the sun on the clay or at Wimbledon or US Open.
Yes.
Those guys are big time dudes.
Those hard courts, there's no way I could do it. My body can't handle that pounding. No way. I give them credit, no question.
Yes, no athlete is in better shape and more boring than a tennis player.
That's not nice.
Look, Pete Sampras sent your sport back about 20 years. Tonight's live broadcast from the United Center for Game 2 of the first round of the 2017 NHL playoffs is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business and sponsored by Citco. Citco is fueling good.
This is 720 WGN. Coming up after 5 o'clock, we're going to have David Haugh of the Tribune here. We're going to have Chris Hine of the Tribune. We're going to have Pat Boyle, and we're going to have Steve Conroy from Comcast Sports and, of course, formerly of your Chicago Blackhawks as well. With you till 6:30. The phone number is 312-981-7200. You want to ask myself, Brent, Harry a question about tonight, all of us at the same time, you can do that as we get you ready for Game 2, the Blackhawks and the Predators, Round 1 of the Stanley Cup Playoffs on 720 WGN. Senators and the Bruins headed to OT, all knotted up at 3. Cubs fell to the Pirates. Did they lose? Is that over?
I'm in Hawks pregame mode.
109-108, Cavs beat the Pacers.
White Sox losers to the Twinkies today up in Minnesota.
White Sox lost to the Twins. Cubs are still in the bottom of the ninth. Okay. More importantly, tonight's live broadcast from the United Center for Game 2 of the first round of the 2017 NHL Playoffs, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business. And it's sponsored by Citco. Citco is fueling good. Okay, moving along to our next little situation. Patrick Kane, Brent Sopel, double shifting in Game 1. Wasn't exactly Game 7. But already double shifting, 24 minutes and 23 seconds. A, do you see that happening again tonight? B, did you like it in game one? And C, can he sustain that going forward? Go ahead. That's three different questions, all teed up perfectly for you.
C, there's no question going to do it. You know, B, you want your best player out there. And obviously the team was struggling offensively. Joe Quenneville saw that. You know, we needed a spark. We needed a tying goal. So who are you going to go to? You're obviously going to go to your best guy. And will it continue? There's no question. He does it all the time. You know, you're going to see it throughout the playoffs. There's going to be certain times where you can roll your four lines. But for the most part, you're not going to see, Jordan 2-2 get much ice time. You know, Hayden, he pops in. You're not going to see those guys get 10 to 15 minutes of ice time. You're going to get your Jonathan Toews back out there. You're going to get your Mary Hossas. You're going to get your Panarins. You're going to get those guys back out there, your best players, more often.
What's the minute number that would scare you? 24-23 is
that's the max.
That's the max.
You know.
Okay.
And again, and here's the other thing is that if you get the lead, your game you play a different style of hockey. Now when you got to chase the score, literally, you know, from obviously the early part of the game, you chase the score the rest of the game. So you know, you go with a TV timeout. You know, so you read the clock, okay, you put him out there. You get him rest, you put him back out there. That one power play, call the timeout, they're out there for the whole 2 minutes. So when you're chasing the clock as a coach, your game plan is different. Your mindset's got to be different.
Absolutely. Coach Q with the lead in the last couple seasons, he's let the fourth line play, you know, in the final minute of a playoff game. And you'll see Tutu get more minutes. I would think Rasmussen now, who's lacing him up tonight in favor of Hayden, I would think Rasmussen be on the penalty kill. Yep. And, you know, that's where his minutes are going to be contributing. But Patrick Kane is a guy that can take the minutes, right? I mean, there are stars in this league that maybe shouldn't be playing double shift. But Patrick Kane, I don't see his game dropping off at all if he's double shift.
You know, and here's your thing. You're not going to see Patrick Kane playing on the penalty kill. And what everybody needs to understand, the penalty kill minutes are the hardest minutes of the game. You know, you're down a man, you're down sometimes two men. So you have to outwork sometimes, you know, that line if you're down one guy or two guys. So you're blocking shots. So those are hard, hard minutes. So Patrick Kane doesn't play those minutes. So you can double shift him on those lines. That's why you see Patrick Kane a lot of times double shifting on those lines and not Jonathan Toews, because Jonathan Toews plays those PK, those harder minutes. So this is how he tries to balance them out and get your best gifted offensive player playing on that side of the puck.
And we had a first time last night in the NHL. I didn't even know this had never happened, but last night Edmonton knocked off San Jose 2-0. It was the first time ever that all the goals for the winning team were shorthanded goals.
Yeah. Well, you don't see usually. It's obviously a rarity you see a shorthanded goal,
right.
And never mind two shorthanded goals to win 2-0. Yeah, there's no question. If somebody asked me a trivia question, was this the first time? I would for surely went with a yes. You know, you don't see shorthanded goals enough to you know, jump against
that.
I would
just think at some point, you know, since the NHL started in the 20s, at some point somebody would have done it. But
well, you know, the shorthanded goal, obviously, again, you know, you talk about being those hard minutes. You know, you're shorthanded the guy. So,
right.
You know, I don't remember, you know, offhand right now what when was in the regular season was the last time the Hawks actually had a shorthanded goal.
You got to look it up. Dan Long's all over it.
Come on, Danny.
He's
Come
got
on,
it.
Danny. Holy man, listen.
Last time,
what do we pay you? Come on.
last time the Blackhawks had a short-handed goal. By the way, we'll take that answer at the text line 231-981-7200. Hey, as we wait for that, let me on Friday in practice. He's got Hartman on the top line with Toews and Panic. You like it?
Well, I don't think that's going to stick. I think you're gonna see that.
Who's Brent Sopel's top line? Coach Q just got fired, or just had a he didn't get fired, but he's got some. He just won the lottery and he decided he doesn't want to coach anymore. You're coaching tonight, Sopel. Who's your top line?
Yeah, obviously I would go with where we had. You get Panic, you get Jonathan Toews, and I would put Kiro right there. You know what he did. You know they had the sustained pressure of the most line in game one. So I would start there. I'd probably start myself on defense with Duncan Keith.
I would too.
You know, I'd be the player. I'd Reggie Dunlop, player coach. But again, every good coach, and I believe that, you know, juggling lines. You know, you know when you're a coach, you have to balance 23 personalities. You have to learn how to push these guys. But Joel Quenneville is a second winningest coach because he can read that bench. He can read when guys are going, and he knows which guys go with good. So when those bingo balls are bouncing, all the fans are like, who's going to play with it? I don't get it. Blah, blah. That's, you know, sometimes that's good.
They brought their toys.
Yeah.
They brought their toys. You know, Richard Panik is a guy that's easy to love. Here's a guy. Now, Toronto this year is in the playoffs, but the Maple Leafs were awful when they just let Panik go.
And well, hang on. So was Panik, too. He was awful there, too.
But he – Stan Bowman saw something.
Yeah, no, for sure.
In Richard Panik. Stan Bowman had, you know, not only does he have to make these tough choices and trade away important players, you know all about that, when there's a championship and there's another cup to win. But Stan Bowman found something in Richard Panik. Here's a guy let go by one of the worst teams in the league at the time, maybe the worst team in the league, who comes to the Blackhawks, one of the best teams, maybe the best team in the league, and just has reinvented himself, led the team in hits.
You know, you know, obviously Stan Bowman went and got him. You know, I give all the credit to Panic. He got here. He saw the opportunity, and he took the opportunity. And, you know, as a player, all you want is that opportunity. Okay, coach, GM, give me that opportunity. Now it's my job to do what I want with it. Am I going to take it by the horns and run? Or am I going to screw it up and then and at the end of the season whine at myself because I didn't do a job? Panic has done a phenomenal job of what he has had.
Coming up at 5:10, we're going to have Steve Conroy on the phone. Chris Hine from the Chicago Tribune will be here as well. David Haugh at 5:35. A lot to do as the Blackhawks get ready for the Predators. You can start to feel the emotion coming into the United Center, baby. It's 720 WGN.
To Van Riemsdyk, right point. To Campbell, left point. Moving down the boards. Hands it off to Panarin beside the left circle. Van Riemsdyk, high slot over to Kane, right circle. Shoots! Oh, and a nice kick save made by Rene.
Yeah, we obviously gave up home ice, so, you know, Saturday's game becomes even more important. So it's a huge game. I mean, obviously we'll try and learn from this game one, not get too down on ourselves here. We knew it was going to be a long series. They're a good team, so give them credit tonight. And, you know, game two, I'm sure the building will be rocking Saturday night. It'll be fun.
.720 WGN, Blackhawks and the Predators coming up. Can we get the crowd involved here? Can we get a little excitement? I want some fake enthusiasm. I know that they're all just eating and enjoying life right now, but it's not
fake.
We're sitting at Goose Island Bar right now.
Yes,
great bar, great, you know, great beverages. So they're really not concerned about screaming and yelling. I see a lot of lips around some cups.
What do you think about the USA? What do you think about the USA Kane jersey in front of us there, Perry? Do you have a problem with that?
No, it's great. It's not a Nashville jersey like you're wearing.
Okay, Steve Conroy is with us, who of course you watch on Comcast Sportsnet with Pat Foley and also in studio with Pat Boyle and Jamal Mayers. Hey, Steve, I'm wearing Patrick Kane's All-Star jersey the year the All-Star game was in Nashville. Do you have a problem with that?
Carm, I don't have a problem whatsoever. Regardless of what the color is, regardless of how tight it fits your body, I'm good with it.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Getting into a whole different area to dislike it.
it's because I've been eating some delicious strawberries. I've had a lot of fruit lately. It fits me well.
It's got the Nashville three stars from their city flag.
It's okay.
I think the reason it says Patrick Kane, too, is because Evander Kane might have been playing in that All-Star game. I can't remember. So they had two Kanes, and maybe that's why you got Patrick on there.
No. Man. This is an 88.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah. Conroy for the defense.
Steve, are the Blackhawks gonna get enough traffic? Excuse me, in front of the net tonight. Are you confident?
Well, yeah, I'm pretty confident. I mean, we're still real early in the series, and for whatever reason, it just seems like the Blackhawks' first few games of any series, it takes them a while to get into it. And you look back at the history, and it's typically games 4, 5, 6, and 7 they really put pedal to the metal and they go all out. But I think you'll see a little more traffic there. And you know, maybe more importantly, hanging around. I mean, you just can't do flybys. You got to park yourself in front, take maybe a bit of a beating, and then you got to find those loose pucks. And it just seemed that Artem Anisimov was the only guy getting to those loose pucks, and he had a couple real good looks. I mean, grade A chances on the doorstep. He put one wide, and a couple others, Rene stopped him. But, you know, aside from that, he was kind of like the lone wolf. You know, we need guys like Panic there, and we need guys like Hartman there. And I think everyone can go there. I mean, you know, Arvidsson basically scored his goal from the doorstep, but he's not a real big guy. So, you know, Patrick Kane's not afraid to go. I think Panarin's got to do maybe a little more in front of the net. I know he's always looking to pass, but sometimes he's got to take it to the hoop and not only take it to the hoop, but then just, you know, throw the brakes on and stay there and look for a rebound, because it just seems like Rene's stopping that first one. And you know, a lot of times there's going to be a rebound there, and that's your job to try and get to it.
Oh, yeah, love when hoop and rebound comes in.
You just love that.
It's just
so
turned out. It was amazing.
Just a quick update. Ottawa Senators just beat the Boston Bruins. Dion Phaneuf with the winner. Big comeback down 3-1 to tie that series up in one. But, you know, what about the neutral zone, Steve? You know, that for me was a complete key to that game. The reason they didn't get traffic, they didn't have the flow to me. What do you think Joel Quenneville's thinking on that side of things?
Well, they'll make some adjustments, and I think you're absolutely right, Soaps. You know, they stack them up as well as anyone. You talk about Ottawa, I think Ottawa is maybe the best team in the league. Guy Boucher kind of started that 1-4 forecheck when he was in Tampa Bay, and he would basically put one forechecker inside the blue line, and the other four guys would just hang out in the neutral zone. And you know, some teams, when they try to really defend against a high-scoring, high-octane offensive team, they try to stack the neutral zone. So, you know, what do you do with that? Exactly what you said. You chip and chase, or you put it in hard around, and you try to load up guys to pick up loose pucks. You know, the one thing I did notice, though, even though they're stacking four guys, one guy's ready to turn and go back for that dump in real quick. And what I did notice, if it's a hard around and Rene doesn't get to it, Rene doesn't stop it on the hard rim, and he's really good at coming out and stopping pucks for his D, but if he misses it, that D who gets it on the far side, he's bringing it back the other way real hard. So, you know, most teams with the hard around and it gets behind the goalie and it's going, let's say, from left to right, they're throwing two guys to the far right side. Well, what they're doing is their first guy getting it is just throwing it right back again, right from where it came. And, you know, it's a good ploy. And, you know, it's almost like a reverse. And, you know, sometimes you catch the opposition with two forecheckers on one side, you know, maybe one guy on the other, maybe nobody over there. And it makes their life easier as far as breaking out. But, you know what? That's what hockey's all about. It's about board battles. And when you're dumping it in, get ready to get your work boots on and your hard hat on and bring your lunch pail, too, because it's about winning those one-on-one battles. So you dump it in. You know, you're giving away possession of the puck, but you're giving it away in the thought that you're going to get it back. So get it in, get it back, and get a shot on net. And I think, you know, sometimes when you keep it simple like that, it makes the game go a little easier for you. And everyone's on the same page, and you're not looking to make fancy plays. And listen, if you get up 3-1, 4-1, then maybe you can start making those plays to the neutral ice area. But I think at least early in this hockey game, get it in, get it back, and get some shots on net.
Yeah, Steve, you know, you're correct with Boucher. You know, he was the first one, and my God, you know, the game inside the game, how frustrating it was playing against him. You know, the 1-4 is, you know, it's, you know, to the point it's annoying. But, and Steve, you know this. This is where the mental side of the game and the chess match between coaches, obviously you got to figure out how to handle it. But mentally, the Blackhawks need to stay within themselves and understand what kind of system that they're playing against. They can't get frustrated. You know, it's going to take a couple times. It's a different way that you're playing against. But they have to, you know, find a way not get frustrated with this 1-4 forecheck.
Well, so if you were part of the nucleus of this team, you know, talking about guys like Kane and Taves and Hossa and Seabrook and Keith, those guys won't get frustrated. I mean, you know, every once in a while you might see them get a little ticked off at a shift if it doesn't go right. But they realize that, you know, there's little battles within the game, but ultimately you want to win the war. And they might have lost the battle in the first game, but there's still lots left of this war. And so that's what you do. You stick with it. You stick with the game plan. They might lose again tonight, and then they're really behind the eight ball. But that's one thing about this team is they never give up on each other, and they stick with it. And, you know, that's, you know, testament not only to the players, but you mentioned Joel Quenneville. I mean, what he has done with this team and the games within the game. You know, I was listening to you guys earlier. Fantastic job, by the way. Great show.
But I apologize. You know,
he is a horseman, and I think that really helps him. You know, he likes to play the horses. You know, he makes his bets, and I think he plays the odds when it comes to games, too, hockey games. And you'll notice him whenever there's a faceoff in his own zone, he'll try and get two centermen out there. So if one of the centermen gets kicked out, he's got another guy to jump in there to take that draw. But he plays the odds. And you know, when down by a goal, he'll double shift Patrick Kane because Kane normally scores one goal every couple of games, and he's your go-to guy. But he's just really good at playing those odds, knowing when to pull his goalie. And he's one of the few coaches I've ever seen pull a goalie with 3 minutes left in a game. You know, typically you wait till there's a minute and a half, maybe a minute. But, you know, kind of Joel started that routine where, you know, if you've got good control in the offensive zone, you're down by a goal, why not pull him when there's 3 minutes left? He's pretty creative in that way, and I just love the way he coaches. But, yeah, these guys, you know, and it starts with the coaching staff, and it's not just Joel. You know, Mike Kitchen and Kevin Dineen and Jimmy Waite, goaltending coach, you know, all do fantastic jobs in their respective, you know, areas of expertise. And they're never going to get frustrated, and they're just going to stick with it. And like I said, listen, they could have come up short again. Pecorino could step, you know, stand on his head. and they'd be down 2-0, but they've come back from 2-0 before in one series. So I've got faith in these guys. But, yeah, it's a big one, and you certainly want to use the enthusiasm in the United Center. When you got 22,000 people back in there, you want to use that to full advantage.
The familiar voice of Blackhawk television analyst and former defenseman Steve Conroy. He's hanging with Mark Carman, Brent Sopel. I'm Harry. WGN's live at the United Center. We're right by the Goose Island Pub. So sticking with the Quenneville horse racing theme, Steve, you're always feeling good about yourself when your barn has a bunch of two-year-olds, young colts. How are these young players doing? You know, I know that we didn't get the lamp lit enough on, in game one. We didn't light it at all. But how do you think the guys stepped up for a lot of these guys, you know, their first playoff game?
Yeah, you know, I thought they were okay. You know, I think Nick Schmaltz was kind of tough on himself. You know, he kind of took the blame for that first goal. There was plenty of blame to go around, three or four different guys on their only goal of the game, Victor Arvidsson's goal. But he kind of, you know, he took it like a man. He said, I got to be stronger on the puck. I thought he was okay, you know, and I heard Soaps talking about Tanner Carroll, the job he did when he get slotted up between or alongside of Taves and Panic, and he did do a wonderful job. So another guy, I think, who played his first NHL postseason game, they were fine. And that's the one thing about, you know, you talk about young two-year-old horses, they bring energy, they bring excitement. This is all new to them. And, you know, as much as we think of Kaner and Taves as, you know, 19 and 20-year-olds, they're playing in the NHL for 10 years now, and you know, they're 27, 28 years old, and it helps having young guys and that youthful enthusiasm kind of rub off on you. You see it, and these guys are just happy to be at the rink every day, and they're chomping at the bit to get out there, and I think it energizes the other guys too. So it's important to have a good mix. I think Stan Bowman was well aware of that. And I think the two that these guys are bringing some valuable energy. And listen, every once in a while, one of these guys is going to be a hero. Maybe it's Ryan Hartman tonight. I saw Zach Kassian playing last night. He scored his first ever playoff goal, postseason playoff goal. It was a game winner. Had an unbelievable game. He was hitting everything in sight. I mean, you know, it's not always going to be your stars that carry it. Sometimes you need that secondary scoring. So, you know, maybe Carroll, maybe Hartman, that guy tonight.
Steve Conroy, always appreciate your time. Thanks for jumping on before game two. We will be watching you all playoffs long, sir.
All right, sounds good, guys. Thanks.
There you go, Steve Conroy of your Comcast Sportsnet, former defenseman of your Chicago Blackhawks. Yes, Harry?
Both these guys were number five on the Blackhawks.
Uh-huh.
How about that?
There you go. Hey, tonight's live broadcast.
They should retire it.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm starting a petition. Retire my number.
I think
I'm leading.
We can make a move here. Hey, the live broadcast before the Blackhawks face Nashville in the first round of the 2017 Stanley Cup playoffs, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business. It's also sponsored by Geico. Visit them at geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. Chris Hine, who does a phenomenal job covering the Blackhawks for your Chicago Tribune, he is up next. 720 WGN. Speaking of the Cubs, back-to-back losses now to the Pirates at Wrigley. Pittsburgh comes back to beat them 8-7 today. That's a bummer.
That's more than the Pirates beat them all last year.
6-5 now, the Cubbies. Is that true? No, they won more than two games last year.
No, 8-1.
8-1 against the Pirates. No, they played them 17 times there, sir. Are you saying
they
at Wrigley?
Played them at Wrigley nine times.
Okay, well, you didn't say that at the start. Aaron and I are fighting. Okay, you want some good
news? Stop slapping each other, girls.
You're both girls. You're both pretty.
You want some good news? The Cardinals lost again to the Yankees, 3-2. St. Louis is 3-8. Does that make you feel any better?
It does. I always feel better when the Cardinals lose.
Twins beat the White Sox 6-0. Sox are 5-5. Cleveland over Indiana 109-108. The Pacers had a shot to win it at the buzzer, didn't go. And Ottawa over Boston 4-3. That series is tied at 1. Chris Hine of the Chicago Tribune is with us here on 720 WGN. I don't know if your mic's on. I'm nervous that it's not.
Is it?
Oh, you sound great.
Yeah,
there you go. All right, so you talked to basically everyone in the room, and everyone's saying they need more net traffic, and Coach Q is saying the same thing. Obviously, this needs to happen, Chris Hine. Do you think there's more to it than just that?
There is a little bit more than just saying you're going to do it. You actually have to go out there, kind of put your body on the line, and go ahead and do it. But this is I think it's the fourth playoff run that I've covered, and it seems like at some point during every playoff run, this becomes a topic. There's a game where they score no goals or one goal, And the next thing you know, they're talking about we need a net front presence, we need greasy goals. It just seems like they just need to remind themselves from time to time to do it. And usually they are pretty successful at accomplishing that once they remember to do it.
You know, you were in that room, you talked to the guys. What was the feeling after the game and into yesterday's practice?
It was disappointment, but it wasn't crushing disappointment. Yeah. they've been in these more dire situations than they are right now in playoff series before. I think it was more frustration with themselves that they weren't able to kind of break the defense that Nashville had and that was keeping them on the outside, all the block shots that Nashville had the other night. I think it was more anger and resolve at themselves than anything that Nashville did to them. I kind of expect them to come out and with a better effort, more determined, maybe a little more ready at the start. The first 20 minutes was not their best hockey the other night, but definitely the second and third period was a lot better. It seemed like it just took them a while to get going. And they've had this weird stat this year where they were 1-5-0 when they were playing in games coming off of 3 days or more of rest, which was kind of odd, but it kind of kept it with that theme the other night. 4 days off before game one, they came out a little sluggish and needed 20 minutes to get going.
That is a weird stat, and it's also weird when they have their first game back after a long trip. They always seem to, underperform.
Well,
Chris, there's 19 guys that dressed for game one that'll be dressing tonight, and Dennis Rasmussen.
Yes.
Is new to the Hawks team. Do you like that move? If you were mixing and matching, would you have Tutu and Rasmussen as the other two forwards out there? What do you think?
I like Dennis Rasmussen. I like his game. I thought he's played well each of the last two seasons. He's played, I think the stat was 112 regular season games the last two seasons, and this is going to be his first playoff game. And when you're talking about wanting to be more physical and getting a net front presence, he's a guy that can do that. He's big-bodied. He's going to get down there. He's going to muck it up a little bit. So if that's what you're trying to do, I think he's a good candidate for that. We'll see how much the fourth line ends up playing. The other night they only got about 5.5 minutes of ice time. So we'll see how much Quenneville deploys them or if he starts double-shifting Kane again like he did the other night. We'll see what happens.
So you've covered the team all season long, and you've been with the Hawks for a while now. So what impressed you most about this campaign? Because nobody really thought the Blackhawks were going to be the number one seed in the Western Conference coming into the year.
No, I think the impressive thing was the development of Hartman and Schmaltz to me was probably the biggest storyline of the year. In the beginning of the season, Stan Bowman was about the only one who was confident where he was saying, this team is going to be better in the spring than it is right now in October. And he was right. They were a better team by the end of the season than they were in October. And I think Schmaltz going down to Rockford, coming back up and kind of finding his game in Rockford, and then instantly clicking with Taves and Ponick was probably the biggest development for this team because it really gave them two really dangerous lines. For a season and a half, it was the Kane, Panarin, and Anisimov line that was carrying them. When Schmaltz got back in that line and Taves caught fire, that just is a nightmare matchup for opponents when those guys are clicking. And Ryan Hartman, 19 goals this season from Ryan Hartman. He didn't score more than 14 or 15 in his 2 years in Rockford. So he was outpacing his production in Rockford. And when you have those three lines with Schmaltz, Hartman, and the second line of Kane and Panarin and Anisimov, those are three really strong lines, each with guys that, multiple guys that scored 20 goals or more in a season. And I think that was the biggest development was those two guys developing.
I've read everything that you, Steve Rosenblum, David Haugh is going to join us next. I mean, I spent my morning combing through everything. Who's your MVP? It seems like there's an argument going on at the Tribune.
I still say Patrick Kane. I mean, the guy was, in the top of the league in points, biggest goal scorer on the team again, and steady production throughout the whole season, and what he does to make everything work around him and affecting matchups. I still think across the whole season, he was the MVP of the team. There were spurts where they were kind of taking turns, where Hossa was having a good run, Anisimov was having a good run. But if you're looking at all 82 games, it was Patrick Kane for me.
It's funny because you could say one guy is the most valuable player, and then you can make an argument that there's three other guys that are the most important player.
Yes.
Which is a different thing than being the most valuable player.
It is. You can put Duncan Keith in that category.
Absolutely.
You can put
the captain.
You can put Corey Crawford in that category or Taves. Even Hossa being at the level that he's at right now, where he had a great year coming back off of an off year for him last year. When they're all clicking like that, they're a really dangerous team, and they're really hard to stop. I just think back to that stretch of play they had in February and early March when it seemed they rarely lost a game. I forget how many points they got in that stretch, but it was something like 30 out of 34 or something like that. And if they can get back to that level, and there's no reason to think they can't, if they can get back to where they were then, I don't see them having much of an issue getting through this series in the West.
Great stuff, Chris. Appreciate you coming by.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Chris Hyen of your Chicago Tribune. We've got news coming up. And then David Haw, the lead columnist, coming up next. 720 WGN.
Around to the near side to Campbell, who spun it back down in behind the Hawk. Nemphiala's got it. Put it in front of Ellis. He shoots. Oh, Crawford down with a big butterfly save. Neal, top of the slot. Fed it over to Fiala, bottom of the left wing circle. Craig Smith dishes to the line to Yossi. Shoots, glove save made by Crawford, and he'll hold on. He's keeping it close.
We didn't give up too many chances. They made a great play to start the game, and that was the only one that went in. But, I thought we still played really well. You know, not too much from the inside. I mean, that was a good game. That was a good game by us. Just couldn't find the net.
Corey Crawford, 19 saves in Game 1. Pekka Rinne had 29 of them. Our live broadcast for the Blackhawks faced Nashville in the first round of the 2017 Stanley Cup playoffs, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business. It's also sponsored by Geico. Visit them at geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Harry Tynos. He's Brent Sobel. David Haw of your Chicago Tribune is with us. Standing ovation for Haw.
Okay. Hey, guys. Nice to see you. I wish this was on a video stream or something so people could see the fashion risk that you took today, Carm.
It's a big move.
The Bumblebee Kane jersey?
It's the Nashville Kane jersey, and we've called them out on them. Saying,
right.
What are you doing?
It's the only jersey I have. I actually thought about this.
It's the only jersey you have.
Of the Blackhawks.
The only sweater.
The only. My fault. My
there
fault.
There you go. NBA guy.
It's gonna leak out.
No,
I am. I'm not gonna
You're
run
just
from
out
it.
Out there exposed.
Well, that's why only.
What's gonna leak out?
My basketball love is just gonna be creeping all over the place. It doesn't leave. I mean, I actually want to talk to David about the Bulls and the Celtics. We're not gonna do that.
Didn't want to rattle you. Sorry.
No, you're fine. So you put in your Hawks column after game one that you think this was Q's best coaching job that he's ever had in his nine
this
seasons.
This year, I think you have to look at overall big picture that this is a guy that came into this season, like every season, with the reputation of not being open to playing young players. And I think that after game one, you look at how little he trusts young players sometimes with, you know, the quick hook with Nick Schmaltz. And I think that's indicative of just how much he trusts veterans more than he does rookies, and yet this year at different times he had to rely on eight rookies. And when a coach has to do that and they still win 50 games and they still have all the points and they're number one in the West, I think you have to give a nod to the coaching staff. He adjusted because he had to, but he did it well.
Yeah, you know, I definitely agree with you. And you know, I've always said that you really find out in the playoffs if you have a good coach or a great coach. And we know Joe Quinn obviously won 3 Stanley Cups in 7 years, second most winningest coach in history for a reason. You know, he thrives off now. You know, what are some of the game plans you think he changes? Because as a coaching staff, you might play somebody 7 times. So you might have to change your game plan 14, you know, 18, 20 different times. What do you think? You know, after being around the team and listening to Joel talk,
I think you saw yesterday sort of indicative of how he's going to be open to changing a lot of things because they practiced for once.
That was when I heard that, I'm like, they did what?
They practiced. So that, you know, they don't do that very often.
That tells you right now, as a fan, that Joel Quenneville was, you know, I'm going to say it, was not happy. Was
got his attention.
That yes. Game one. They do not, like, the fans have to understand, they haven't, as you know, you cover the team, you know the beat of the team. When was the last time they actually physically practiced?
They don't do during the playoffs. They really don't.
No.
You know
go
that.
Back to February, maybe till you really had.
Because the pace of the schedule was so compressed that they didn't have time to. And I think they're going to have to figure out a way, you know, schematically with the neutral zone trap to come up with better ways to get to it, because that was really bothering them the other night. It really slowed the pace down, and Nashville did what Nashville does with the lead. They milked the clock. They did everything that they do that frustrated the Hawks, and I think they have to find ways to maybe use their speed and skill to their advantage.
D-Haw, this is a Blackhawks team to me that has brought three cups back to Chicago. Yet there are so many people that are walking in this building now saying, this is a must-win game. Where do you sit?
Harry, I'm just glad that you're still able to ask the question after the Cubs lost two in a row and you're still with us. That's good because, you know what, the Hawks lose two in a row, then you're not to the point where you are maybe panicking. And I think everybody has told us almost telling us too much in the last couple of days not to panic. Don't panic. It's the Hawks. Hey, we know that. But you know what? If they lose this game and they're down 2-0 in this series to this team, look around the playoffs. Crazy things are happening. The Wild are down 2-0. They lost two games at home. Yeah. Today, the Bruins lose in overtime. This is not a team you want to drop behind two games because this series, Nashville's very good at home. The Hawks are good on the road. But you have that core that you trust, but you also have four rookies that started game one. You're incorporating new guys. They haven't been there before. So I don't know that you can take anything for granted. So I don't know that you ever call this a must-win with this Hawks team, with this coach and this core. But I do think it's one that if you fall behind, it definitely changes the complexion of the series.
You also mentioned that in your column that Jonathan Toews has not dented the back of the net, if you will, in a while.
And 10 straight.
Yeah, and he didn't have a shot on goal in game one. So are you're concerned about the captain?
Well, I think you always, you know, after last year against the Blues in that first-round series, look, nobody's going to question Jonathan Toews' investment level or commitment level or skill level. But I do think that, you know, this is the time of the year where you'd like to see him break through. I'm not quite sure what's happening. I was surprised he didn't have a shot on goal. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what it's a product of. Brent, you would be more equipped to talk about that. But you do want him to come through when you need him because this is a game where you need him.
I didn't realize he had a shot on goal. No. I thought it was good that you put it down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, go back to it. I think that neutral zone, the way Nashville played that you just touched upon, screwed the whole team up. You know, there was the 29 shots were per se mediocre shots. There was no grade A opportunity in the slot, and that's what Chicago Blackhawks thrive upon, are those grade A opportunities. So am I surprised that Jonathan Toews didn't have a shot? Not really. The way that game played out, way that neutral zone struggled them. You know, obviously Schmaltz was up there with them. Then they dropped Kiro. They were mixing lines. You know, it was kind of a cluster from the start. You know, as soon as they scored that first goal, it was really a cluster the rest of the game.
Let me ask you a question because this really stood out to me. From a player's perspective, from a Nashville opponent's perspective, you come in here, when you hear the Hawks, you know, basically not give Rene as much credit as I think that he deserved. You know, we made it easy on him. He really didn't have to do too much. Does that resonate in the opposing dressing room? Because I've got to think at some level they noticed that as much as I did.
Well, you know, again, you hear it, especially with social media. You know, you see these comments on the ground, and Carmen talked about, some of the comments, and Ryan Hartman talked about those exact same thing. But Nashville, they don't really care. You know, it's a different season. You have to block that out. All Nashville has to worry about is, listen, we got that win. And Pekka Rinne knows, you know, he's one of the best goalies in the NHL. You know, there's 16 starting goalies.
Is he still?
Huh? Yeah.
Is he still?
Yeah. He has that ability to steal a series. And when he's obviously finished, he's athletic. He's 6'5", 220 pounds. There's not a lot in that there. So if you don't get that traffic in front of him, good chance he's going to stop it. There's nobody on this team that has a Shane Weber slap shot.
Right.
There's only one or two guys who can actually blow a slap shot by a goaltender. We don't have any of those guys. So Pekka Rinne knows he made 29 saves, but he knows that they weren't hard. He really didn't have to fight for them. There wasn't any odd man rushing. No, there wasn't a Panarin and Kane 2-on-1 where he had to go post to post and stretch out. So he's smart enough. He knows that. They're happy about
The Anisimov save was a pretty nice little moment for him, though, no? I mean, a little kick out there.
It was a nice save. But again,
I'm trying to back you here, David.
But at the end of the day, when you get into, let's approach this after tonight game. You'll see a different battle level that Pekka Rinne is going to have to do is fight around screens because there's going to be a lot more bodies in front of that.
I think it surprised me because Brent, you always hear hockey guys, as you guys call it, pump the tires. You always hear them be respectful of the opponent to a fault.
Yeah,
almost to exaggerate the point. And yet, the first thing that Joel Quenneville said after the game was, he didn't have to work very hard. We didn't trust him very much. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, because
he's saying that for a reason.
He's saying that reason because it was telling his team.
Right.
You know, that he was not disrespecting National Predators, and that's what I want to say is that a lot of these fans and a lot of the, you know, this series, people weren't giving National any chance
right.
at all. This team is good. They scored 240 goals. The Chicago Blackhawks scored 244. They only scored four more goals than the National Predators team. They had 12 guys score 10 goals. So this is a good team. So Joel Quenneville was making a statement to his team and only his team. No disrespect. Hey, boys. And because Joel Quenneville doesn't say anything in the media, as
right.
you said, very calm.
Notice
very,
that.
And so that was like, hey, red flag, flash, and hey, boys. Showtime, wake up.
People before the season were picking the Predators to win it all. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but they were kind of like a little sexy pick, the old Preds.
At this point, the TV show Nashville has a better chance to still be going in May than the Nashville Predators.
Oh, you know what, Harry? That changed forever when they killed off Raina James.
Why'd they do that?
I mean, it ruined it.
Game of Thrones,
come on.
One thing.
You know
Nashville,
what?
Another.
The writers, they just took it. What are they doing with that show?
Writers, they're all self-indulgent. Talking about TV writers. So, we've talked about the captain not finding the back of the net. We've talked about how good that second line, most teams, that'd be the first line with, Anisimov and Panarin and Kane. But I want to go to the third line. There's a beast on the third line. There's a guy that a lot of people thought last year, oh, he's past his prime. But Marian Hossa has come back. And this, to me, you smell that? This is a Marian Hossa game. Don't you think that this is a guy that can just say, guys, I've been here before. You young guys, feed off of me.
It wouldn't be the first time in the playoffs he did that against the Predators.
Yeah.
We all remember 2010.
Yeah.
And this is a guy you do understand has come through in clutch chances in the past. I like the way he's accepted the fact that he's on the third line in the playoffs as a veteran. You don't ever hear about him worried about the quote-unquote demotion. He understands his limitations at this point. He understands where he fits. I think it's going to be more interesting on the third line, Harry, to see how Nick Schmaltz fits in there, if he stays there for very long, and then with Ryan Hartman going back up to the first.
I got two more for David Hutt before he goes out of here. Number one, and Brent, I want you to comment on this too. You're talking about James Neal kind of toeing the line.
Oh, he definitely pushed the envelope the other night.
Okay, so you expecting the Hawks to have some form of James Neal moment tonight?
Oh, I think it's in the back of your head. I don't know that they're going to go out of their way. I think that's hockey. I think that's playoff
it's
hockey.
Playoff hockey, 100%. Yeah. James Neal, smart guy, around the league. He's been bulldozed by the Blackhawks. He goes after Patrick Kane, and
got
your
attention though.
He rattled Kaner.
Yep.
Wasn't expecting it. He dabble his toe over that line? No question. But what we're talking about, we're talking playoff hockey. Now, if you watch the rest of the game, there's dangerous, there's dirty things going on. I don't like your mom. Your mom cooks terrible. Yeah, your girlfriend's not good looking. Let me tell you the things that are said and done. This is playoff hockey.
Putting on the foil.
The foil's always on.
Let me read this from David's column before the Bulls' final regular season.
My neck.
Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
I know. I'm sorry. I just have to do it. The Bulls should give out broken compasses to the first 10,000 fans at the United Center. This is before Wednesday's game. The fact that not even those with the highest basketball IQs in town have any idea which team will show up answers the only question that matters.
Carm, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm glad.
You don't have to apologize.
I'm glad that they're in the playoffs. For people that are excited about the playoffs, they'll probably take the Celtics to six or seven games. I just don't know what you're accomplishing if you're the Bulls. Do you want to be right smack dab in the middle where you are, right in the center of mediocreville? That's where you are. And, in the NBA, that's the worst place to be. I don't know if they're rebuilding. I don't know if they're competing. I don't know what they are.
I don't know. And listen,
and they don't either.
They don't. And I agree with the whole thing. I just thought it was a beautiful way of putting it.
Thank you for reading, Carm.
No problem. I'm there. You know,
I know you are.
Working so hard on this reading.
Well, at the end of the day,
for years.
At the end of the day, which team in what league wants to be mediocre?
Right.
Nobody wants to, but. There it takes big nuts to say, listen, we're rebuilding. Your fans are going to hate you. You're right. It sucks. We're going to struggle for a couple years. We're going to develop. We're going to draft some good players. But, a lot of owners and a lot of GMs and those managers don't want to utter those words.
The fear is they're going to take the Celtics to seven. They're going to be competitive. And they're going to fool the front office into thinking, okay, we're one player away from making that next step. And they're going to keep everybody, bring everybody back, trade for Carmelo, and then,
Did you just say trade for Mello? No, I
was actually going to look at the trade machine, figure out how to do that since you had that in there also.
No, that'd be the worst thing ever.
Listen, playing the Celtics, though, if Jimmy does take out Boston, maybe Boston overpays for Jimmy. There's one way that you could look at it as a positive. That's not probably going to happen, but just throw that in there. All right, David, you can go. Thank you so much for joining us today. David Haw, the great columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Yes, Harry?
Well, I mean, you're a writer. You're a safety who became a writer.
Yeah.
So you love the story. What would be a better story than a guy playing the team he spent his first 7 years in the league with, a guy who has battled his demons and currently has his foot on the throat of the demons, coming back to bite the hand that once fed him? How great would it be for Jordan Tutu getting another star to show up tonight on the score
sheet? Out of nowhere, Tutu.
Well, I thought I'd bring him back to Hawks.
I think Tutu's probably just hoping that he's in the lineup tonight at this point.
I thought you were talking Rondo. I was like, where is he going with this? I thought we were doing a Rondo
moment. I love the storyline, the way you're thinking, though, Harry.
David,
right,
thank you.
Guys.
David Haw, your Chicago Tribune. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. Our live broadcast before the Blackhawks facing Nashville in the first round of the 2000 Stanley Cup playoffs, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business, sponsored by Geico as well. Visit them at geico.com or call 800-947-AUTO. We have one more half hour of stellar hockey, Game 2, Blackhawks Predators radio coming up here. I'm starting to get a little bit nervous. Just want to let you know that. I know we got to go back to break, but Harry, you getting a little juice flowing out here. Soaps, yeah. You feeling like you want to jump on the ice? I know you do.
You look like you could still jump on the ice.
You really do.
Well, you know, it's tough sledding out there. I got to stay in shape. I always want to be on the ice. I miss it every single day. I would do I'd do anything to get back on that ice and be there. You know, playoff time was my time. I loved doing whatever it took to win. Making sure I was blocking every shot, being a complete idiot that I am. I loved every second of it, and I missed it big time.
Well, you were doing what you needed to do to help the club win, man, right? I mean, it wasn't...
That's playoff hockey, and that's who I am. That's always, you know, I always put the team first no matter what. If it was game one or game 50, you know, I wouldn't have been where I was without my teammates. You know, that's just the kind of guy I was, and that's why, you know, playoff time was, you know, I loved my time. I love sacrificing. I wanted to win more than anybody, and I knew in 2010 that was my last kick at the can. You know, I was getting old, over the hill. You know, knew I wasn't going to be around the league much longer, so I was going to do absolutely everything. And you know, I'd like to say I almost did everything, but I tried to do everything I possibly could.
You know, even though he's an actual athlete, and I'm as far away from an athlete as possible, it dawns on me that Brent and I have one thing in common. From about 1980 on, we both tried to get in front of as many shots as possible.
On that note, let's take a quick timeout, get you in the news at 6 o'clock, 720 WGN. This is
my kingdom come. This is now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
Live at the United Center outside the Goose Island Pub as we get close to a real, real pregame. And, then of course, the puck drop right after 7 o'clock. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Harry Tynitz with Tynowitz. He's Brent Sopel. Thanks to David Haw. Thanks to Chris Hine. Thanks to Steve Conright, all stopping by in the 5 o'clock hour. Keys to victory. Brent, how does the story change tonight?
You know, number one for me is neutral zone. You know, we got to find a way to break that neutral zone trap, whatever that is. It, you know, dumping the puck in, chipping in, supporting each other, waves of five. That to me was the key components why they didn't play well, weren't successful. Special teams again, the power play was terrible, and it was interesting. We had two defensemen playing the power play last game because we were afraid of Nashville. Nashville had ended up having 12 shorthanded goals in the regular season, so Joel Quenneville was a little bit worried about that. But you know what, your power play wasn't very good, didn't get enough shots, didn't, you know, gain any momentum. So it'll be interesting to see what Joel Quenneville is, but whatever that is, you got to be more productive, you got to move the puck. I got special teams, you know, I've got the neutral zone, and I just want pace. I want to see them play an up-tempo fast game, get it in, get it out, get it on, get off, and play that up-tempo game.
You know, I want to see the Hawks score first. I've seen too many.
Well, I want to do that too, but like, what are your keys to the game?
Well, okay, all right.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, your stars got to play like stars, but I don't want, you know, Nashville took advantage of sort of a fluke play, and they're up 1-0, and they were able to ride that 1-0 all the way home. So, I mean, you're going to have 22,000 screaming Hawk fans tonight. We're outside the Goose Island Pub right now, WGN. We see a wave of red. I mean, it's excited humanity draped in red. Let's take advantage of this. Let's jump up 1-0. Let's jump up 2-0. And your stars got to play like stars. Let's dust off all the cliches. I want to see Panarin. Everybody knows Kane and Taves, you know, are great. I want to see Panarin, you know, Ovi Jr. tonight. I want to see him setting up in his office to the goaltender's right, and I want to see him bury that shot like he's been doing for the last two seasons. So I'm expecting to see the four guys, Kane, Taves, you know, Hossa, and Panarin just putting the puck in the net.
Well, Panarin's, you know, played 8 playoff games. He's got 7 points. So he's no dummy. And for me, the fact is that neutral zone screwed up every one of those players. You know, if you watch in the regular season, you know, Panarin swung back, Kane swung back. They played kind of tic-toe, drop passes, and they flew through the neutral zone. They gained the speed, were able to gain the offensive blue line and make plays. Last game, they weren't. You know, they stacked them 1-4, and that one, let me tell you, that 1-4 is really hard to play against. It sucks. It's boring. It bores you to sleep. It's like, oh my God, this is painful. And that's why when I talked to Steve, you know, I think it's Steve Conroy about just the mental side of the game, you know, so if they can improve on those things, do I think you're going to see a completely different team tonight? 100%.
Pure shots in game one, not shots on goal, but just shots overall. The Hawks had a 57-33 edge. I mean, that's a huge number.
The shot, I think the shot blocks ended to be a Nashville Predators ended up blocking 36 shots. I think that was the final count. So there's a couple things to this. So we talked about the neutral zone. They got that lead and they locked it down into defensive mode. You know, they sat back, they gave the Hawks the outside, and they blocked a ton of shots. So as D-man, if you got that puck, you got to get your head up. If you got to shoot it wide off the boards, you can't get it blocked. You got to get it. Your job is not to hit the net. Your job is get it past that first forechecker, and then you got. And then it gets down low. Then that's where the forwards got to battle for positions, find that puck, hang on to that puck, and start that cycle game.
Brent, you talked about that. There's a line, you know, you can cross. If you're a player on the ice, you know, you want to get in the face of the other team. You want to throw them off their game. You want to let them know you're out there. You know, let them know that, hey, guess what? I'm getting ready to knock your block off. But you don't want to, like, you know, Hartman, I think, has taken a lot of penalties this year where if he had just pulled back a little bit at the last second, he wouldn't take a penalty. I saw your old buddy Chris Bestig the other night getting in Getzlaff's face. You know, Ryan Getzlaff's the best player on the Ducks, and, you know, he's thinking about Bestig instead of, you know, thinking about going down the ice and scoring the goals. How much can the Hawks do that tonight?
Well, the Hawks want to play whistle to whistle. Blackhawks have never been a team ever to play after the whistle. There's nobody tough. Nobody's going to fight. This is playoff time. I can't remember last time you saw a fight in playoff time. During the whistle, you know, I'm going to tell you, your mom needs to use deodorants. Your mom needs to go to the gym. Your wife is terrible. I'm going to tell you the things I'm going to say 100% to get you off the game. But they have to play, you know, whistle to whistle. Ryan Hartman didn't take a very good penalty last game. He's been known that. You got to play to that line, and you cannot go over line. Because if Ryan Hartman goes and takes, you know, one or two bad penalties or whoever that is, they're going to sit on the bench because, you know, you go give Nashville a couple power plays. They score a couple power plays. And then, you know, it could be a different ballgame.
Tonight's live broadcast from the United Center for Game 2 of the first round of the 2017 NHL Playoffs presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business. It's also sponsored by Sitco. Sitco is fueling good. What's going on in the room right now, Brent? I always dreamed of being a professional athlete. You were a professional athlete. It's 47 minutes to the start, and you guys, they're about to come out on the ice and have a little warm-up. What's going on in the room?
Well, you got about 15 minutes before you're going over for warm-up, and nothing. It's exactly the same thing you talk about. So this is game 84, right? So yeah. You're preparing for this as you did for game one, as you game for game three, as you game, you know, obviously the circumstances are different, but you can't look at it that way. You got to look at it at this game because then, you know, you start thinking into it. The worst thing you can do is think. So those guys are getting ready. you know, that core group has been there. They've played more playoffs games than, you know, half the NHL combined. So they've been there. They know what to do. They're going to go out and do it. They've been around this game long enough. They know collectively as a group that they didn't play well. They had a practice yesterday. So Joel Quenneville reiterated, you know, what they needed to do, what they need to work on, what they're going to change. They're going to be a different team. So they're sitting there. They're relaxed. They're just getting ready to, you know, 15 minutes, get on the ice and get a good sweat. A
little massage, just, you know.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's what I would be doing.
Eat a peach.
Absolutely, have a peach, eat a massage, have a massage.
And the one roster change tonight is 40 is out, 70 is in. Dennis Rasmussen, we know he'll be killing penalties. Do you see Dennis Rasmussen getting a lot of time when it's 5-on-5 tonight, Brent?
You know, I don't. I think you're going to see the top three lines. You're going to see them get the majority of it. Yeah, I will see. I think Patrick Kane will do the same thing. We'll double shift back with that fourth line. But I don't see Jordan Tutu getting much more than 5 to 7 minutes. Rasmussen might get a little bit more, depending on what the penalty situation. Obviously, last game, there's only Ryan Hartman's penalty, so there's only one shorthanded opportunity. So there wasn't a lot of minutes that way. So that'll determine that. But if they stick 5-on-5 for 60 minutes, you're not going to see that line get too much. It's going to be a three-line horse race right now.
Tonight's live broadcast from the United Center for Game 2 of the first round of the 2017 National Hockey League Playoffs is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business, and it's sponsored by Sitco. Sitco is fueling good.
Let's take our final timeout. Coming up to Blackhawks official pregame, Judd Surratt, John Weideman, Troy Murray, 720 WGN. So we mentioned with David Haugh, who was with us a little while ago, that Jonathan Toews did not have a shot on goal in Game 1, and he hasn't scored in 10 straight in the playoffs. Now, I feel like even guilty saying that, you know, because it's, you know, like it just doesn't feel right. But I also think it's interesting when you look at that and realize, hey, man, you need the captain to be performing at a high level, if not just winning about tonight, but I'm talking about going is where the Blackhawks want to go.
My weight on that is Jonathan Toews is going down in history as one of the best captains. Now, you need the surrounding cast to be better. So when Jonathan Toews gets on that ice, he wants to be the best two-way player. He wants to score every time he's on the ice, and he wants to keep the puck out of the net. One of the best guys in the NHL on faceoffs. Selke Troy, he can do it all. But when he sees that there's a gap, he tries harder. Now, there's a lot of times trying harder is counterproductive. Trying less gets you more, which, you know, because then you squeeze a stick, you're trying too much, you're trying to do too many people's jobs instead of doing your own. So, you know, he saw it against, you go back to last, you know, Game 7, you know, in St. Louis last year, you know, that battle, you know, There was a lot of holes.
Game.
There was a lot of holes, and he was trying so much harder than he needed to. So, you got to have that surrounding cast so he can be Jonathan Toews the way Jonathan Toews can be. You need him to be, and as long as he's focused on doing his job and not everybody else's job, then he's going to be an amazing, you know, captain on the ice.
Well, for a veteran like that, he has to trust the young guys now, and he hasn't been through the wars with these guys, at least in the playoffs yet. Yeah. So maybe that's part of game.
It's just one game. There was nobody good last game. You know, across the line, yes, they outshot him, but you'll see a different team, you know. You could look at Jonathan Toews at one point in time in the season. He was ridiculous. Anything he touched went in.
Right, and Toews, all year, they've been mixing and matching. You know, lately, you know, the end of the season, like when they went on that streak where they got like 31 out of 35 points, 31 out of 36 points, you know, Toews was with Panic and Schmaltz, but they keep throwing guys on his line. He keeps playing with them. And he is one of the great, you know, face-off men in the league, which it's important all year round, but it's especially important now you get in the playoffs to win every face-off.
Yeah, you know, because you start with the puck. Now, if you win a defensive zone, you know, you get the puck, break out, you're out of your zone. You win it, you know, obviously the offensive zone. Again, you start with the puck. The Blackhawks want the puck. They're not a team of
go get that puck back. We want to keep it. We want to hang on to it. Offensive zone, we want to hang on to it. We want to cycle it. We want to do things. They want that puck. They've got the skill for it. And with Jonathan Toews winning those draws at the rate he does, that allows them to put their game, game plan intact.
Giving you the last minute, if you're in the neighborhood and you want to come to the old United Center on a Saturday night, standing room only tickets right now on StubHub are $93. There's two of them, $96.90 for four or more. And then if you actually wanted a seat, you could get two in 303.
Not a bad seat.
303 is upper corner, not terrible. You're kind of on the ice, actually. And they're going for $144.95 for row 16, which is not nothing.
Not too shabby.
But that is Blackhawks playoff hockey right there in the resale market. I don't know if you could go to the window right now. I'm assuming everything is sold.
Brent, there are two defensemen that are on the team this year that were not there when the Blues knocked the Hawks out last year. What does it mean to have Campbell back and to have Oduya back?
Well, they both, there's three Stanley Cups between them. There's no other team in the NHL where they can say the starting six defensemen have all at least one Stanley Cup. It's crazy. Obviously, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Yarmolson, there's nine right there between those three. Now, you look around the NHL, it was great to have Brian Campbell back and Johnny Dewey's, taking top 4 minutes. I thought Johnny was decent last game. I thought Brian Campbell was not very good last game. He needs to be a lot better. We brought him in, to end up playing some of those top 4 minutes off guys, and he had some key turnover, two key turnovers, and he can't do that. Where Corey Crawford had to bail him out some big saves. So as a whole on that back end, definitely needs to be a lot better. But the experience back there, and they want to be able to ride six, spread those minutes out. Duncan Keith only played 24 and a half minutes. That's not a lot of time for a genetic freak like Duncan Keith. So that's no big
genetic
deal.
Genetic freak.
And so they can spread it out, as long as those guys, Trevor and Reimsdyke, and you got obviously him and Brian Campbell that play good, that allow them to get back out there, play, 14, 15, 16, 17 minutes. That takes a few extra minutes from Duncan Keith, those top four guys, because you need that rest from down the line when you want to win 16 games.
It is our final timeout here. One stat that I think everybody perhaps knows, but if you don't, I'll say it again. First three games in a playoff series under Q, the Hawks are 31-33. Games 4 through 7, they're 45-16. They get better, decidedly better, yeah, as the series goes along. So that is reason for confidence, team. That this team needs it right here, because I know you two are very optimistic.
Carm,
included, yes.
How many times have you been called a genetic freak?
Never. Never once, Harry. But I'd love to be. It would be great.
Maybe
what's your
weekend?
Girlfriend? Your girlfriend doesn't call her that?
No, hasn't happened. Oh. Hasn't happened. All right, our final timeout, Blackhawks pregame with Judd, Troy, John, all coming up, 720 WGN. Wrapping it up here, our live broadcast before the Blackhawks in Nashville, first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs has been presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Make Bedford Park the new home for your business. Also sponsored by Geico. Visit them at geico.com. Call 800-947-AUTO. Programming reminder, after post-game tonight, we'll have the post-post.
Yes.
These three same gentlemen, yours truly, Mark Carmen, Harry Tynowitz, Brent Sopel, from 11 until midnight, one extra hour of Blackhawks coverage tonight on 720 WGN.
Tell everybody to call in. I want to hear from fans. I want to hear some of their opinions, what they think about game two.
Absolutely. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a win, will we not?
Yes, we'll be talking about a win. Soaps has been doing a show during every commercial break.
It's unbelievable.
He's relating to the fans. Everybody's coming up. Everybody's making the same comment, too. Dude, you could play. You look like you could still play. He's got the gun showing tonight.
Oh, everybody asks, stay in shape. I'm single. I got to stay in shape. I'm not married where I can let myself go and be fat. And, I'm getting old. It's tough sledding with all these good-looking chicks and all these young guys running around.
You also are perhaps thinking about trying to play in the Olympics next year, too.
Yes, you're right. I am still debating on trying to make a comeback. I've pondered that many times, and
you know, this might be an opportunity to try and make a comeback and maybe possibly play, you know, play in the Olympics.
That'd be great because, obviously, with the exception of Ovechkin, you know, the NHL players are not going to go. You should certainly go play in the Olympics.
And Ovechkin's not going to go.
No NHL player. If it does stay where NHL players don't go, they are going to make some major suspension, a 20-game suspension, or something crazy like that, so no players go.
All right, we got Judd, John, Troy all coming up, and we want to thank everybody for listening, texting, calling, and thanks to Steve Conroy, thanks to David Haw, thanks to Chris Hine for joining us. The Blackhawks and Nashville coming up. Who gets the big goal tonight?
Oh, the Beast, 81, Marian Hossa.